Unveiling the secrets A-list copywriters use to make themselves and their clients millions. This is the Copywriters Podcast with your host, the world's greatest copywriting coach, David Garfinkel.
So you could say the purpose of a sales funnel is to create desire that leads up to a sale. But these days, if that's what you say, you've left out an important part. And it's a part that could make the difference between a sale and no sale. With trust in general at such an all-time low and the feeling of isolation so rampant and widespread, people want a little more. They want to feel like you as a business person or as a business care about them personally and also about the things they care about. Now, you don't need to be the personal Oprah of their very being. You're not granting them wishes or completely improving every aspect of their lives. But if you've got a good offer, you're improving some aspect of their lives. And if you can create a relationship in your messaging that includes the spirit of caring, your sales will do much, much better. So we're going to talk about how to do that. But first, you know, we only tell you this each week, because we care. Copy is powerful. You're responsible for how you use what you hear on this podcast, and most of the time, common sense is all you need. But if you're writing for copy, for offers in highly regulated industries like health, finance, and business opportunity, or if you make extreme claims in any industry, you may want to get a legal review after you write in before you start using your copy. My larger clients do this all the time. So what I want to talk about here is nurturing a prospect relationship from the moment they first come across your advertising until after the sale. When I told you we were going to do this, you got excited. You said you love this topic. Why is that?
I think that a lot of times, as marketers and copywriters, we tend to jump to the commitment way too quickly. It's like halfway through the first date and we're already proposing marriage. Yeah. And that can work sometimes, but it doesn't lead to long-lasting customer relationships. And I'm all about, in my marketing and in my copywriting, I'm all about building cult-like fanaticism. I want, once people make a purchase from me, I want them to go tell all their friends. Everybody that they know is probably also my target market. So I want them going out and evangelizing for me. And as soon as one of my competitors runs an ad for 5% less than what I'm selling for, I don't want my people jumping ship. And so for all of those reasons, I think that the topic that we're talking about today is what helps solidify your place in the market.
Yeah, and just to be clear, you're not in the relationship advice or religious cult niches, right? I mean, you're talking about these things, but you're talking about other businesses besides those, just to state the obvious. So when you talk about first date and marriage, it's metaphorical. It really applies across the board.
Yeah, and I'll just add, when my clients have a competitor introduce a Me Too product, my client's audience, my client's customer base go out and attack and go to war with the competitors. And that is not something that you get without doing what we're going to be talking about today.
Wow. That's pretty amazing. Okay, so on your first contact, you want to start to develop a relationship. You don't need to be thinking about making a sale in the very first words that you speak to them. Instead, think about getting into your prospect's head by letting them get into yours first. Let them get into your head and figure out what they're thinking, how they see the world, how you can reach them by understanding who they are and what's important to them. Think about Gary Halbert's coat of arms letter, which mailed huge numbers for years. Notice he never mentioned a problem to solve. Instead, he sparked curiosity with a question something like, "Does your family name have a coat of arms?" But what was brilliant and what made the letter so much money was that Halbert did more than arouse curiosity. Because when he asked that question about your family and the coat of arms, Halbert tapped into something deeper: pride, identity, and a natural desire to know more about ourselves. That's why the letter worked so well. It connected with these universal human interests. When you look at some of the most famous and successful direct mail campaigns, the first thing they do often is focus on letting the reader make a discovery rather than, bam, finding out about a solution to the problem and asking for money for that solution. That is, they invite prospects into a story or revelation. The offer can come soon enough, but that's not what they lead with. I mean, think about the two young men Wall Street Journal letter Martin Conroy wrote, which generated a reported $2 billion in subscriptions. Big, if true. The letter didn't promise quick riches or to solve an urgent problem. It told a story that made readers think about their own paths in their own lives. In the same way, your first message should set the tone for the relationship you want with your prospects. When you lead with curiosity instead of urgency, things open up. That doesn't mean ignoring problems or never closing. What it means is pacing yourself. When you put together your first message, think about what makes people lean forward rather than put up their hands to defend themselves. Think of your opening paragraph like the start of a good conversation. Share an insight that makes your prospect think, wow, I never thought about it that way. So the idea is first focus on engagement and attention rather than prompting action. This creates stronger foundation for long-term relationships. Sometimes your first contact isn't about closing a sale. It's about starting a conversation. The Wall Street Journal letter did this by presenting a choice, not a challenge. On a beautiful late spring afternoon, 25 years ago, two young men graduated from the same college. They were very much alike, these two young men. This opening created immediate engagement without mentioning business, success, or money. Your initial message should feel like finding something interesting. When you're putting it together, ask yourself if maybe you would want to learn more if you received it yourself. This approach works in consumer and B2B niches across the board because this approach is based on human nature. The best first contacts create anticipation for what comes next.
I think the key takeaway for me there is you've got to have that connection. And just going back to the relationship analogy, if you don't connect, if you don't see that or feel that spark when you first meet somebody, it's probably not going to go anywhere. And it's the same thing with your copy. You've got to create you've got to create that connection, create that spark right from the first sentence.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a reason that there's the phrase setting the stage exists. It's not just a theatrical term. It's really setting the tone and the tempo and the feeling and the parameters of any relationship, any adventure or adventure or experience. Okay, so you're starting to build a relationship. Trust, low. How do you build it? Well, if you don't get much trust early and often, nothing else matters all that much. So how do you do it? I mean, instead of looking at lots of modern examples, let's go back over 100 years. Claude Hopkins, what he did in his book, Scientific Advertising, he talked about Schlitz beer. His work with Schlitz proves what works. Instead of saying, our beer is pure, he walked readers through each step. The clean glass rooms, how they filtered the water, their 4,000-foot wells. By showing these plain facts about making beer, he moved Schlitz from fifth place in the market to number one. And Hopkins didn't just make a list of what Schlitz did. He showed why each step mattered to the taste of beer. And the simple way of linking facts to benefits still works today. More recently, but still maybe half a century ago, David Ogilvy used this same idea in his famous Rolls-Royce ad. The headline didn't brag about how quiet the car was, and said, At 60 miles an hour, the loudest noise in this new Rolls-Royce comes from the electric clock. That clear fact hit home with readers and helped create one of the best car ads ever written. Now, interesting. Did Ogilvy just sort of, you know, like John Hamm did in the last scene of Mad Men, did he sit on the beach meditating to come up with the idea? No. He spent 3 weeks reading everything he could about the car before writing a word. He dug through hundreds of facts to find the ones that would matter most to his readers. And he found a great fact that he put in a headline that will last forever. When I said John Hamm, that was the actor's name. I'm talking about Don Draper in Mad Men, very last scene, where supposedly they come up with, "I'd like to buy the world a Coke." Yeah, right. When you're building trust in your copy, start by showing you know what your readers are going through, their daily problems, what they've tried before, what bugs the most. Then spell out clear steps and real results. This kind of proof needs to show three things: where something started, what they did, what happened next. When you talk about what makes you qualified, keep it simple. Drop all the big claims and the fancy degrees and the titles and the certifications. Show what you've done and the results you've gotten. Because more than anything else, that's what people care about. Your past work matters, your degrees matter, but how you talk about it matters more. Don't just list what you've done. Show how it helps solve problems. Give examples. Show progress on a timeline. Instead of, "We have over 1,000 customers try. We started with 50 customers, grew to 250 in 6 months, and now work with 1,200. Also, sprinkle. Don't concentrate. You don't have to pack all of your proof into one spot. Don't think of it like a category or a blank you have to fill or something you have to check off on a checklist. Spread it through your copy so it flows naturally. Most of all, focus on what your readers get, not on making yourself look good. Your main job is not to impress them. It's to show you can help them get real results. Oh, by the way, when they see that, that's when they pay you. So when you keep things down to earth, you'll earn trust faster and more often. Big flashy claims do get attention, but after that, the smaller, believable wins work much better. Remember Joe Sugarman? He showed us a really smart way to prove claims with his Blue Blockers ads for the Blue Blocker sunglasses. Instead of telling people how good the glasses were, he took them to the streets. His TV ad showed real people trying on the glasses and saying what they saw. These natural, unplanned reactions drew more orders than any fancy sales pitch. His method was simple. Hand someone the glasses, let them look around, catch their first reaction on camera. No scripts, no paid actors, just real folks saying what they saw when they put the glasses on. Sugarman tested different ways to show these demos. He found letting people describe colors and changes in their own words worked better than telling them what to look for. He also learned that showing several shorter reactions beat using one long testimonial. One smart thing he did, and listen to this carefully because this is counterintuitive, he kept the ordinary reactions along with the excited ones. Not everyone jumped up and down about the glasses. Keeping these normal reactions made the strong reactions more believable. So I'm going to talk about a semi-obsolete product here, but still important. The great copywriter Jim Rutz used this same straight-talking approach when he wrote ads for WordPerfect, which was a word processing program, and I think still exists, and there are some lawyers that have a WordPerfect fetish, some judges, but most people, I always hated it. But anyway, when going up against market leader Microsoft Word, Rutz set up real tests where office workers tried both programs. He focused on little things, everyday tasks people knew well, fixing margins, moving blocks of text, setting up letters. In his ads, he showed regular folks working with both programs. The proof came from watching people handle real office work. His ads stuck to simple jobs anyone could test for themselves. They pointed out exactly what steps people took and let viewers see the results. Like Sugarman, Rutz kept things honest and realistic. When Word did something better, he said so. This straight dealing helped build trust in WordPerfect claims. Both of these copywriters found small details make the proof stronger. They used real names and places. They showed the actual steps people took. They let viewers see everything happening on screen. And the big lesson here, let your customers see the proof with their own eyes. Skip the big claims or reel them in a little bit. Show real tests. Keep everything clear and checkable. When you make a claim, show the proof right there, not buried in fine print or hidden behind fancy words. This open approach to proof still works today. Clear demonstrations beat clever claims. Real reactions top polished pitches. And honest proof, shown plainly, builds more trust than any string of promises.
I have a friend who has a mastermind, and initially the mastermind made a huge claim. It was a valid claim. It was about him and his clients and what he had been able to make for them on their yearly revenue. But it was so big that most of the people in his target market just couldn't see themselves in it. And when he lowered the claim, when he said, instead of what I make and what my clients make, this mastermind will help you make what you think you can actually get to for his target market. And he showed claims of that. And the enrollment in his mastermind doubled, tripled within a year. And it was all just because he showed real people that the audience could relate with rather than the most extreme claims that he could make. So this is, in my experience, this is something that's very valuable. Make sure that the people you're talking to and the proof elements that you're using make sense to the people that you're talking to and don't seem out of reach for them.
Yeah, that's great. And it's a balancing act, right? Because sometimes you can't get attention. You know, I mean, you could hardly write a headline and say, you know, fix margins 20% faster on your document with WordPerfect, right? But after you find a way to get their attention, get into their real world, because that's what they really care about. And that's a great story about your friend in the mastermind.
And real quick, back to the relationship analogy. If you're going out on a date with somebody and immediately you think, wow, this person is out of my league, no matter how much you want them, no matter how much you desire what they might bring into your life, you're immediately going to start self-sabotaging because you're going to say, I don't deserve this. Oh, they're going to come into my house and think little of me. All of these things are going to come up and you're going to say, even if it's the best offer in the world, it's the best date that you've been on in 3 months, you're immediately going to start saying, yeah, this is great, but it's probably not for me. So having that attention grabbing headline, but then followed up with, hey, but this is for you, is so important for making that connection.
I agree. Let's talk about another thing. Let's say you make your sale. You've done the first two steps really well, and you make a sale. After you've been in business for a while, you realize the sale isn't really closed at the point in time money changes hands. I mean, technically, you might think it is. But what you do after someone buys often decides whether or not they'll refund and whether or not they'll ever come back. Even if you did nothing wrong, and there's nothing wrong with what you sold them, here's the thing. Most copywriters only focus on the getting the sales side. Big mistake. Why? Because your first job after someone buys is to help them feel good about spending the money. This is just moving in sync with human nature. Even when people want what they bought, buying it can make them feel nervous. But you can calm their nerves very easily with simple messages about simple things, like telling them when their order will arrive and what happens next. Okay, I just bought 5 of these outrageously overpriced writing pads from Levenger. I'm not saying I don't like them. I do. I use them all the time. I just think they cost too much. I still buy them though. But here's the thing Levenger did that was so simple, not flashy, not clever, but solid. First, they sent me a few emails telling me that my order was received, that it was shipped, and finally telling me it had been delivered to my mail drop. Silly, right? Who cares? No, made a big difference. And for some products, break down exactly what your customer should do first. Don't give them a big list that feels overwhelming. Instead, show them one small step at a time. I mean, a kid learning to ride a bike, you don't start with complex moves. You begin with the basics that they're more likely not to mess up. So let your customer have a small win right away. Show them how to get something useful from what they bought, even before they know all the details. When people see results right away, they stick around longer. The day I was putting the show on the air, I saw an Omaha Steaks commercial on the air, and it was much more detailed and easy to understand than most commercials I see. And here's the thing, when you actually buy from Omaha Steaks, their package inserts include exact storage instructions and cooking steps matched to each cut of meat you ordered. So if you got three kinds of steaks, or steak and lamb and chicken or something, there will be different inserts for each part of your order. So when customers open their boxes, they find clear directions on the exact items they bought. Calms the nerves. Here's a good way to look at it. You're going to answer the common questions before customers ask them. Handle the usual worries up front. Show them you thought about what they'll need. And plan your after-sale emails in three parts. Right away, the moment they buy. First steps when they get their order. And moving forward, helping them use what they bought. This really nurtures the relationship. Each part of this three-part sequence needs different information. Right away, tell them their order is good and what happens next. When they get their order, show them how to use it right. And as they keep going, teach them more ways to use what they bought. Keep what you write in line with what you said when you were selling the product. So if you promised easy to use, your help better make things easy. Remember, people don't want general tips. They want exact steps for their exact purchase. When your customers know how to use what they bought and feel good about it, they're much more likely to buy again and tell their friends. It's simple. Good follow-up turns one-time buyers into regular customers. Bad follow-up wastes the money you put into your acquisition cost to get the customer in the first place.
I think the underlying thing here is the feeling that people have when somebody's searching for a solution to a problem. It's because they don't feel very confident that they can solve it themselves. They're looking for somebody to help them solve it. And when they buy and you do these things that you were talking about, it instills confidence. If I get an email saying, hey, we're packing it up, we're going to ship it out tomorrow, then I get an email, here's your tracking number, it's on its way. Then I get an email, here's how to use it now that you've got it. That makes me feel very confident, and it associates a feeling of confidence with buying from you. If you don't do those things, I don't know when it's showing up. I don't know if it's been delivered yet. I don't know how to use it once I get it. I'm anxious, and now I associate anxiety with buying from you. So if you want people to keep buying from you, have them associate confidence with making a purchase from you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that just creates a relationship of quality communication and trust at a very basic level. Okay, so the next step is moving your customers up the price ladder. Now, this is stupid what I'm about to tell you, but it's understandable. Businesses spend all this money and effort getting new customers, and then they never try and sell them a second time. It's stupid because of the profit potential in front of them that they miss. And it's understandable because for some reason, it's a lot more exciting and seems to make a lot more sense to keep getting new customers rather than to develop the ones you have. Of course, not everyone makes this mistake. My former client, Agora, I spent 5 years critiquing copy for them as a retainer consultant, copy consultant. Agora, the financial publishing giant, built a price ladder that worked really well for them. So their front end would be a basic investment newsletter, say $49.99 a year. And these entry-level products delivered solid advice, real value, but they also showed readers what they might learn from more specialized information. So when readers saw good results from their first newsletter, Agora would offer them specialized advisories, maybe almost 10 times as much, $2.95 a year to $4.95. These would focus on specific market sectors, and with a higher price, of course, customers got deeper analysis and more focused recommendations. And at the top tier, they offered premium trading services in the range of $1,500 to $2,500 a year, and sometimes even more. And these services would give them specific buy and sell signals, more frequent updates, direct access to the financial gurus. So what Agora does that's so smart is they made each step add more value, but regardless of which step you were on, they stayed true to their core promise, helping people make better investment decisions. The higher prices made more sense to their customers and they bought. When you develop this kind of price ladder, start with something affordable that solves a real problem. Make sure that it works on its own and don't make people feel forced to upgrade. Pay attention to how customers use your first product. Notice when they get results. That's the perfect time to tell them about your next level up. But don't rush the timing or you'll push people away from buying. Don't wait too long either. If you do, you very well might find help somewhere else. Don't wait too long though. If you do, they might have already found help somewhere else. Your entry-level product should hint at what's possible with upgraded versions. Show customers a clear path to better results without making them feel stuck with a stripped-down version. Also, figure out what people want more of. That's what they'll pay more for. Some people want basic guidance. Others need more detail. Your top tier might offer personal attention or faster results. You can add special benefits at higher levels, but keep your main promise consistent. Build natural steps where customers choose to buy more because each level brings them closer to their goals.
I just want to emphasize before we recap, Agora is one of those companies that spends a lot of time and effort on crafting and perfecting their front-end offer, but they also put just as much time and effort into the follow-up, the back-end offers. And just to emphasize what you said, we as copywriters, as business owners, we spend a lot of time getting customers into the door, and we don't really spend that much time following up and making more offers to them. And Agora is one of the companies that really nails this, so they're a good example to follow.
Yeah, they are. I mean, when you're a copywriter for Agora, you're busy, but you know they know what they're doing, and they've had a lot of success, and they've really set a standard in the industry. Okay, so let's recap. First contact, making the right first impression. How to identify and speak to your prospect's pain point, creating an irresistible entry-level offer that proves your value, and writing headlines and leads that filter for qualified prospects. Trust building, using proof effectively, structuring testimonials for maximum believability, demonstrating authority without bragging too much, and using specific numbers and results to overcome skepticism. After your sale, keeping the customers happy. Don't abandon them and don't just keep trying to upsell them relentlessly. Write follow-up sequences that reinforce the buying decisions. Create quick wins by having them take small steps to get success, to build momentum and satisfaction, and create expectations for the next offer in your sequence, which gets to the last step, moving customers up your price ladder, timing and positioning your next offer, using past purchase history to personalize future pitches, and building exclusivity and status into higher tier offerings.
I love all of this. I think that I went to it a couple of times throughout the episode, but really understanding that a customer, business owner, customer copywriter relationship is a relationship. This is what selling is really all about. And if you think about what's a douchey thing to do on a first date, don't do that same thing in your marketing or in your copywriting.
That's a really good thing to say. Yeah. Good way to look at it. I agree. That's funny.
All right. And if you enjoyed this episode, we have 400 plus episodes over at copywriterspodcast.com. Go check them out. And you can get the show notes for this episode there as well. And until next time, we will catch you later.
Catch you later. Hey, did you enjoy today's show? Want to help get it into the ears of more listeners? Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app.
This is the Copy and Funnels Podcast Network.